From beanies to carry bags and from shoes to caps, browse our shop now at tntradio.live. This is Jesse Zurawell and Perspective on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome to Perspective. I'm Jesse Zurawell, your host for the hour. Back with me today is Riley Wagaman, independent writer who is based in Russia and whose work can be found at edwardslavsquat.substack.com and frequently republished at offguardian.org. And you can find original work occasionally at unlimitedhangout.com. Riley, welcome back, brother. How are you?
Jesse, I'm doing well. It's always a pleasure to chat with you. How are things over where you are in the States, in the homeland?
Well, personally, things are just fine, but surveying the land, things seem to be anything but fine. And where does one start with that conversation? I know less and less these days, but I'm observing it and trying to make sense of it the best I can and trying not to despair too much. And it's tiring, man. It is tiring, but I'm not complaining because there are people out there, obviously, who have it way worse. So things are good. That's my long way of saying that things are good, relatively speaking.
Excellent. Excellent.
Now, speaking of something that's not good or deemed not good by the Russian Federation recently, carbon. And you wrote about, or wrote a summary of, the Russian Federation's, let me get the exact name of this. It is the new climate doctrine of the Russian Federation, which was approved on the 26th of October. And according to the Kremlin's website, the president signed the decree, quote, on the approval of the climate doctrine of the Russian Federation, unquote. And you did, as I mentioned, a summary of this on your Substack, drilling down into the main points. And it is a condemnation of carbon and a declaration of moving to a low carbon economy, a low carbon lifestyle in the Russian Federation by 2060. Carbon neutrality will be achieved according to this. Now, I gave a bunch of details there, but let's drill down some more. What are we looking at here? And are you surprised at all that this has come to pass?
Well, look, the big picture here, the carbon neutrality by 2060, I don't think is very surprising. I'm pretty sure that Russia in the past has signed off on, or at least endorsed in some manner, all sorts of international agreements that have basically, stated that, you know, the world is working towards this carbon neutral status, which I guess, I think there's, you know, they have this whole what's so interesting about the whole carbon climate change arena is that they have, you know, all these they have this whole lexicon, like carbon sequestration or whatever, you know, like you have to all the carbon you put into the atmosphere you have to capture somehow, right? And like store somewhere. It's bizarre. It's such a bizarre little scam, basically. I mean, well, it's not a little scam, it's an absolutely enormous one. But
yes,
I don't think it's particularly surprising that the language in it, this is what I'll say. Look, Russia over the last really actually starting from, you could trace it back to the early 2000s. In fact, when I was reading about, like, okay, tell me about what is this doctrine really about? And even TASS, Russian state media, says, look, a lot of this stuff that Russia is signing on to was actually initiated by Dmitry Medvedev when he was the president of Russia, you know,
in 2009.
Exactly. Yeah. And so it was even back then when Dmitry Medvedev signed off on this climate doctrine that said, we consider climate change to be a danger to Russia's national security. So what's different, though, in this document is that it lays out very specific ways. It's sort of like a game plan, a blueprint on how Russia intends to achieve this so-called carbon neutral status. And the language in it, really, I mean, you can't differentiate it from the language you would find in some Davos, you know, email or whatever Justin Trudeau is in, you know, barfing out of his pie hole on any given day, or anyone, the EU. I mean, it's not, you cannot distinguish this language. It uses all the same buzzwords. It uses all the same truly anti-science ideas. It talks about how it wants to basically pump money into Russia's research sort of, you know, hubs and education centers in order to raise a new generation of academics and experts who can explain why carbon, which, you know, makes up 20% of our bodies, is such a horrible, disgusting, dangerous, and terrible, you know, thing that we have to stop. And
yes,
so yeah, it's like, I guess what I would say, I mean, I'm sure we'll get into the nitty gritty here, but the major takeaway here is, I think that there's always been this assumption that because Russia is obviously of one of the world's largest exporters of oil and gas, you would think logically that Russia maybe wouldn't be that keen on signing on to an agenda that would undermine its one of its largest, you know, source of income. But you could say that you could say the same thing of the United States, and the United States is totally on board the climate. So you have to ask yourself, why is this? Well, it's because I think the people at the top have essentially signed on to the same agenda, and there's no ambiguity here. It's in very clear, plain language. Russia has committed to carbon neutrality by 2060. That's only 10 years after the European Union, which, by the way, I'm just going to say very bluntly, I mean, if you are someone who signs on to, you know, these what I would describe as very superficial ways of addressing what are very real environmental issues that the world faces, I mean, Russia is very, very far behind in even basic stuff like recycling. And yet it's saying we're going to be carbon neutral just 10 years after the EU. So
right.
it's quite surprising. It's quite illogical if you just look at this objectively. And it's also very interesting how I don't see anyone in our beloved English language alternative media space talking about it.
No, I'm not surprised about that. I think, though, that this is not about so-called carbon neutrality, and it's not about mitigating, as it's stated as ad nauseum in this doctrine, the anthropogenic impact on the climate, so the man-made impact on the climate. I think that's the sales pitch, and I've said this many times before on the program, that's the sales pitch. But this is about, at the very least, creating new global market structures and ways of trade and ways of financial exchange that use carbon neutrality, that use global warming that use these very specious concepts as justification for and motivation for reorienting the international monetary and financial system. And our friend and colleague Ian Davis has done a lot of work laying this out. And I think it might, and this is hypothetical on my part, it might go beyond that when we're talking about the technology that's needed to ensure, for example, that prop and carbon capture or sequestration is happening. That's going to involve sensor and surveillance technology, essentially fourth industrial revolution technology, that is going to feed into all sorts of systems, particularly these what are known as Web3 systems with blockchain. And blockchain, I'll say again, is not just something that has to do with cryptocurrency. It has to do with many other things in terms of verifying on a so-called immutable ledger that something happened. And it's being used a lot in terms of supply chain logistics, in terms of smart contracts, as they're called. And the same sort of technology is going to be used here. And a lot of this technology, if not all of it, has to do with collecting data, big data, as it's referred to, and learning from that data and refining the system based on lessons learned from that data. And that is, as I've stated before, what's known as cybernetics. And I see it as building out this global cybernetic digital panopticon that you and I have talked about before. I see it as part of that. But to get people to go along with it, or to try to get people to go along with it, it's the emotional narrative that comes forth that the climate, the planet itself is in an existential crisis, and we have a limited amount of time to deal with it. And the primary way we must deal with it is through carbon neutrality. But as you pointed out, when you look at just Russia, for example, and its exports of oil to India and China, or its involvement in offshore gas fields in the Eastern Mediterranean, there's nothing carbon neutral about that. And it has no intention of stopping those activities, as far as I can see. So we're not really talking about what they're putting forth. It's their story, their narrative. But I think this is about something much bigger. And in terms of the history of this, I want to point out that in the second item underneath the first section, general provisions, it reads, the legal basis of this doctrine is the Constitution of the Russian Federation. I'm going to have to add a few words here because the translation from Russian to English is not so good. The Constitution of the Russian Federation, federal laws, regulatory acts, the President of the Russian Federation and the Government of the Russian Federation, Vienna Convention on the Law of Treaties of May 23, 1969, Montreal Protocol on Substances that Deplete the Ozone Layer, dated 16 September 1987, United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change of May 9, 1992, hereinafter referred to as the Framework Convention, Kyoto Protocol to the Framework Convention of 11 December 1997, and last but not least, the Paris Agreement of December 12, 2015, and other international treaties of the Russian Federation, including on environmental issues and sustainable development. So Russia's long been involved in these international treaties and agreements on so-called climate change, going back to the 80s, if not before, with, again, the Montreal Protocol on substances that deplete the ozone layer from September of 1987. So there's a long history of this. And in this timeline that's laid out in this first section of the doctrine, we can see how this has been building over time. And again, not just for Russia, but for many, many state actors around the world.
Yeah, it's just, you know, and what I would just say to that, what is so upsetting about how environmental issues are addressed globally, I mean, in Russia, but globally, it's like there are so many pressing and very obvious and in your face environmental problems that could be addressed in a very concrete manner. Like, for example, there are a ton of landfills around Moscow that cause all sorts of very, very serious health issues for the local population and poisons like local agriculture, et cetera, et cetera. And nobody talks about, like, you know, just being more, you know, not being a scumbag when figuring out a system to dispose of waste. It's like we have to start assigning credits to a ubiquitous substance in the atmosphere, and that's going to stop the bad things from happening in the environment. I mean, it's so abstract and so ridiculous when there's so many things that could be happening in Russia, especially. I mean, it's a country that the entire economy is based on natural resource extraction, and the way that they do it is actually, I mean, it's quite in some ways it's really horrendous. I mean, I've seen it firsthand. I spent times in the regions, like in Bashkortostan, and it's pretty brutal. And like, there's very simple ways that we could make that process less sucky, you know. And I'm sure that same principle could be expanded to the entire world. And yet now we're not supposed to focus on, you know, just trying to make the lives of everyday people better and more environmental, like, you know, in more in tune with the environment. We got to start counting our carbon credits. And you know what it is, Jesse, it reminds me so much of the whole COVID thing, which is like, oh, we're so concerned about public health. We have to stop everything and think about public health, when the number one cause of death in Russia and pretty much everywhere in the world is like heart disease from all sorts of things, like, you know, really poor diet, not enough exercise, just a really bad, you know, bad everyday bad life choices, you know, blah, 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 blah. No, 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 no. It's because a positive PCR test put you in this red zone where now we're going to inject you with an unproven, you know, slurry produced by a big pharma company, and we're just going to let you die. And that's public health. And like, that's how I see carbon credits. It's you identify that there's an issue in the world and you just pursue something that it does absolutely nothing to correct this, but obviously is going to line the pockets of Goldman Sachs and all these other scumbags. And Russia is absolutely no different.
Right. Right. And the overall point being is that this is not about human well-being, despite the stories and the narratives that are spun ad nauseum by Russia, by the EU, by the UK, by India. And unfortunately, a lot of this has been coming from the so-called global south as well, from Africa, where there are very real problems, very real environmental problems, just like anywhere else in the world. But the political elites of African countries seem to be fully on board. Most of the countries, at least, seem to be fully on board with this story, this narrative, which amounts to a scam, which is not going to make anybody's lives better. It's going to do many things negative. And one of them, again, that I see as big, that's negative, is building out this pervasive computing, sensoring, and surveillance framework infrastructure on a worldwide level. And Africa is arguably ground zero for this. And also, I shudder to think what's going to happen in Palestine once, if ever, the war on that country ends, when there's the time comes to reckon with the destruction. What kinds of technologies are going to be ushered in the name of sustainable development and so-called climate-friendly infrastructure? And we can look, I think, to Ukraine and what the regime in Kyiv is explicitly doing to address, or so-called address, the reconstruction of that country. And it's all in on these fourth industrial revolution technologies that bode horrifically for the people of Ukraine. So overall, I think we have to not take this at face value for sure. And also, I think, get beyond the idea that this is just about depriving people of carbon and trying to kill people off. I'm not saying that that is not a part of it, but I think there's much more at play here than that. It's not just about depopulation or depriving people of essential life resources. It's about building something bigger that has to do with international finance, that has to do with so-called technological innovation, and perhaps this global brain thing that we hear about. And I've talked about it, but there are others talking about it as well. And what that is ultimately meant to do, I don't know, but there's much evidence. It's not speculation on my part. There's much evidence that this is being constructed. And the UN talks about it itself, the building of a global brain to do what? Have us solve problems for them in the Skinner boxes they've created for us, and that we've corralled ourselves into by buying into these narratives, these stories they put forth about anthropogenic effects on the climate. I don't know what the end game is, and I don't even know if the agents pushing this know what the end game is, but the important point is to get beyond certainly their simplistic narratives. And I think simplistic narratives that some of us hold, and I'm just speaking for myself in this case, that we always have to dig deeper into what we can see or know or intuit is actually going on here, or at the very least form hypotheses, because they're not telling us everything. They've never told us everything, and they never will tell us everything.
Yeah, and you know, there's a problem here where it's like, I think that when we talk about these issues related to the climate change and how to save the earth, well, first of all, let's just be real with each other here. The earth is going to be fine. Like, the earth will continue to exist for a very, very long time. And it's like about us, right? It's like, don't worry about the earth. Don't even worry about the climate. That stuff will sort itself out. It seems to be, I think it's a human thing, right? It's a human thing where everyone's obsessing over, oh, like, what about the humans? Like, are we going to be able to survive for another generation, or blah, blah, blah? Look, again, The problem here is we are looking at problem. There's a problem, which is absolutely real, which is that large multinational countries, which are, sorry, corporations, which basically are pulling the strings on countries on the world.
Same thing, to, countries, corporations. Right,
exactly. Yeah, exactly. You know, this beautiful Freudian slip. Basically get to do whatever they want with anything they want around the world. And Russia is no exception. And to pretend that it isn't is just madness, because actually Russia is literally just a giant. It's literally just a giant resource pipeline for other countries. And I'm going to give you an example here that I've seen pop up in Russian media and in Russian language forums over the last week. You know, people, for example, are talking about this new, they're thinking of building this like Siberia 2 pipeline to China, right? This new gas pipeline to China. And a few party poopers in Russia have been pointing out that it's like, oh, we're going to build this pipeline to China. And by the way, Beijing probably doesn't even want this pipeline. We're going to build this pipeline. We're begging to build this pipeline, even while one out of every four Russians is not connected to gas in this in the country, right? And you have a situation where they're going to build a pipeline, and like it's going to pass through cities that are not connected to any kind of gas system, right? And so like you have to understand something here. It's like this is... There's no, it's just about money. Like we got to stop with this idea that, for example, I think there's this meme like, oh, well, Russia would never go along with the green energy thing because they have all the energy and they would never, you know, they would never leave their, Russia is just, the Russian government is just controlled by a bunch of oligarchs who are selling off Russia's natural resources to the highest bidder. And the moment that China or any other country decides they don't want that gas or oil, they're not going to care at all. And in fact, they already don't care because one out of four Russians don't even have a connection to, you know, they have to heat their house using wood or coal or something. So I don't know what to say, you guys. You know, it's like I think it's time to just very calmly assess the situation here. Take a step back. Say, you know, what is really this? This is another thing, Jesse, that I love so much is the whole like people losing their minds over who blew up the Gazprom, the Nord Stream 2, who destroyed the Gazprom, the Nord Stream 2. Oh my gosh, I'm losing sleep over who destroyed the Nord Stream 2. Do you realize that literally no one in Russia cares? Literally no one in Russia cares because not a single normal Russian profited a single kopeck from Nord Stream 2. Not a single one. Right. Like we're talking about maybe 1% of Russia actually profited from shipping natural resources to Russia, to Russia's alleged sworn enemies in the collective West. Nobody cares. Nobody profited from it except for a bunch of Gazprom executives. All right. So it's like, The whole energy paradigm, the whole way we talk about this, the whole way that it's addressed, it's just a giant scam. It's so annoying. And the way that we talk about it, the way we discuss it, and it's like, I don't know, Jesse. It's very frustrating. It's too bad. You know what? You know, a final point. You know, I love that book. What is it? There's that a fascinating book about the mass illusions, it was written like 200 years ago by this guy who documented all these people thinking crazy things like witch hunts and medieval anyway, it doesn't matter. Point is
hysteria.
Like exactly this there's this long history of people just falling into this mass hysteria. And you know what it is? It's like this in the medieval times there was this mass hysteria. It's like how many angels can fit on a needle, right? Like we got to count how many angels can fit on a pin of a tip of a needle. This is, you know, we're dealing with the same nonsense here, with not just the carbon nonsense, but on a larger level. Like, oh, but you don't understand, like, the energy game. Moscow's on top of the energy game. Russia doesn't care about the energy game. Russia's controlled by oligarchs who just sell off their energy for, at this point, they're just selling it for free, basically, to India for rupees, which they can't do anything with, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, mm-hmm. It's just madness. The whole thing is insane.
It's important to point out, too, that this is almost certainly being driven by the UN Sustainable Development Goals and Agenda 2030. And it's not hard to discern that from the language. There are references to the year 2030 in this doctrine. So, for example, this doctrine develops the provisions of the strategy of socioeconomic development of the Russian Federation with a low-level greenhouse gas emissions until 2050, and also takes into account the provisions national security strategy of the Russian Federation, concepts, foreign policy of the Russian Federation, economic strategy, security of the Russian Federation for the period until 2030, strategy, environmental safety of the Russian Federation for the period until 2025, energy strategy of the Russian Federation for the period until 2035, and other strategic planning documents in the field of support national security of the Russian Federation. And that's another point you make, too, that national security is injected into this, and also the epidemiological well-being of the Russian people. So this is linked to public health as well. And there's language in here, which I can get to a bit down, about this. If this isn't addressed, then there's going to be a risk of disease and infection spreading. So we have that scam, that fallacious narrative injected into this as well, no pun intended. But I also want to point out that there's a lot in here with regard to technology. And in particular, this is a bit down a ways. So, effective climate policy is designed to promote dynamic technological modernization of the country's economy, strengthen its positions in international economic relations, increasing competitiveness primarily due to rational environmental management and energy efficiency. So we have technical modernization, and I'll point out that the environmental management and energy efficiency, this comes back to this idea of cybernetics, of ecosystem services, and the technology that goes along with that is pervasive computing, this ubiquitous sensor technology that is not just going to be used on so-called carbon sinks, for example. It's going to be used on the behavior of people, whether they be in rural areas or whether they be in urban areas or areas in between. And the doctrine goes on to say that the Russian Federation will promote research and development in the field of energy efficiency, use of renewable energy resources, greenhouse gas absorption technologies, and development of other innovative, environmentally acceptable, and economically effective technologies, positioning new knowledge-intensive technological solutions in the field of environmental development of the Russian Federation and climate change, their inclusion in international climate research programs and related research, taking into account the interests of the Russian Federation and using all possible advantages of international cooperation, there's also talk or writing of the development and implementation of a state program for high-tech equipment and national centers for research in climate and related fields. And you point out a bunch of this in your Substack article. For these purposes, training and advanced training of specialists in the field of climate, studying the impact of climate on the economy, population, and environment, as well as developing and adopting engineering and technical organizational measures for adaptation and mitigation of anthropogenic impact on climate, including training of highly qualified scientific personnel, training of senior students of educational organizations, higher education on the basis of leading scientific organizations of the state, internship for the most gifted young scientists, specialists, graduate and senior students in the world's leading scientific centers, and training of diplomatic personnel, as well as professional consultants for international negotiations and preparation for international climate agreements. And this is, we have to read between the lines a bit here, but this is reskilling people and building the workforce for the fourth industrial revolution. And as I've documented in previous programs, perhaps the entity, the Russian entity spearheading this at the forefront of this is Rosatom, the state nuclear agency, which is also involved in developing and building Russia's nuclear weapons. And they have a lot of programs with regard to reskilling youth or bringing youth into this milieu and training them for this save the planet justified imposition of the fourth industrial revolution. And I think that's what we're talking about here. This is one example of Russia's embrace of the fourth industrial revolution.
You read this climate doctrine, and like I said before, it's a copy paste from anything that you would find from all the usual suspects, all the really gross organizations and gross intergovernmental organizations and gross governments. It's absolutely the same. And really quickly, Jesse, just so that I didn't come off as a total schizo, the book I was thinking of is called Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds by Charles McKay from 1841. And he goes through all this list. And look, the point I was trying to make, I didn't do it very well, but the point I'm trying to make is, like, you know, Charles McKay in this book from 1841, he's like, oh yeah, like the people, there was a crop failure and people burned these women. It's like, well, why did they do that? Oh, because people get tricked into doing stupid shit for no reason whatsoever. But you know, I think in this situation, it goes much further than just superstition, because there's obviously they're making money off of this, like the whole carbon credit system, the way that everything now has a price on it, right? Everything has a price tag on it. Everything is being monetized. You know, we have these ideas of, you know, you put a digital device in your body and your heartbeats per day are, you know, monetized to see how much energy you can make, blah blah blah. It's crazy. Like, the way that we are approaching environmental issues is deeply unhealthy and anti-environment, in my humble opinion, and superstitious, and well, it's not superstitious, because it's actually profit driven, which is very rational and cynical way of viewing the world. But look, it again, you know, you have this thing, to just get back to the basics here, this doctrine that was signed by Putin. I mean, it literally talks about how we're going to train a new generation of scientists and young environmental scientists to explain to Russians how dangerous carbon is, and how all they use this word, stakeholders, how all stakeholders will have to understand the importance of fighting carbon to protect Russia's environment or whatever. I mean, it's so laughable, and it's so far away from the day-to-day reality of your average Russian, who frankly, just like any average American or any average Italian or Canadian or Eskimo, is just trying to survive. I mean, it's insulting. And if you want to look at, for example, a website that I often cite and enjoy reading and recommend to anyone listening, Katyusha.org, which is edited by a conservative, Orthodox, Christian, Russian patriot who is, I believe, still pro-Putin. They ran this article recently absolutely hammering this climate doctrine, just mocking it ceaselessly, like endless mockery, where they're just pointing out how completely deranged and anti-human it was and how it had no relation to observable reality.
Right.
And
right.
Again, you know what, Jesse, at the end of the day, what disturbs me, and this comes up not just with the climate issue, but obviously with public health issues, like with so-called vaccination or, whatever, and with the digital ruble, the CBDCs, and with all sorts of other issues that are immediately flagged in the West by, our incredulous colleagues in the West who can see the writing on the wall and can have identified the evil demons amongst us. They point it out in the West, and then when Russia does the exact same thing, it's either ignored or it's justified. And so
right.
I think that the takeaway here is Russia is doing exactly what everyone with more than two brain cells in the West understands is not very logical. And yet a lot of these same people are praising Russia as some sort of, brighter tomorrow. And look, Russia has so much to offer the world. The Russian government, not so much.
Right. I want to point out too that the second to last item listed in this doctrine reads as follows: since there is a possibility of conflict of interests of climate policy subjects, professional organizations, public organizations, brackets, associations, and other non-governmental nonprofit organizations, mass media information plays an important role in preventing the exacerbation of such conflicts and the emergence of social tension, as well as in preventing lobbying of the interests of individual interest groups. With this goal is to discuss solutions to climate change problems and the consequences. Such a change is necessary for the economy, population, and environment, conduct with the participation of all interested parties. So a little chunky there in the translation, but it talks about the need for media campaigns to push this. And it also talks about, perhaps more importantly, I would argue more importantly, that there needs to be a comprehensive re-engineering of the economy, population, and environment conduct in order to push this agenda through. And underneath this, at the end, there's a document overview, and the last paragraph of it reads, "The consequences of expected climate change that are unfavorable for Russia include an increase in fire danger in forests, degradation of permafrost, disruption of ecological balance, the spread of infections, and an increase in energy consumption for air conditioning." So a mixed bag there, but I want to point out again that the spread of infections and this perpetuation of the myth of pathogens causing sickness is embedded in here. And we can see how this builds off the fear that was created and is still being promulgated by the COVID operation. And I think it's important to have that short-term, in this case, historical perspective of how these things are layered on top of one another. And again, we have to point out, because some people just don't get it, it's not just Russia doing this. It's not just China doing this. It's all of the major so-called powers or state actors in the world, and the ones that have allied themselves with those actors for whatever reasons. And in the case of Russia and China, it's a lot of global South countries. I would argue the political elites of those global South countries who are signing on to this garbage as well and imposing this upon their people without much, if any, say from the people who want this. And this gets into, for example, with what the BRICS and Russia in particular proposes to bring to the African continent in terms of impact investing, which if you look at it is not only driven by the collection of big data, just like this agenda here, but it's driven by poverty mining and keeping people in vulnerable situations, never really fixing the problem. Because if you fix the problem, then you can't keep pushing the agenda, refining the agenda, and on in perpetuity. So lots of things at play here and lots of connections. And again, I'll go back to what I said earlier that yes, there's profit involved, there's control involved, but I encourage people not to stop at just those motives. And I think we need to look at possible larger motives that are connected to those as well. And where do military and intelligence fit into this in terms of the technology that's going to be used, for example? I don't know, but questions we need to ask.
Yeah, again, it's so frustrating. You know, you have this language in this doctrine, Jesse, where they talk about the adverse consequences of climate change includes a risk to the health of citizens, including increased level of morbidity and mortality, specifically targeting so-called individual social groups. Who is specifically being targeted by this increase in carbon that is raining down on your head? Like, it's just so bizarre, and it's also just, it's just copy pasted from the bullshit that we're getting from everywhere else in the world. So I mean, I'm sorry, but if you think that Russia is different, all you have to do is look at Russia's climate doctrine, and you'll see it has the same word salad that has absolutely nothing to do with science and has absolutely nothing to do with protecting the health of its own citizens. And, you know, it's like, and again, they equate so-called, fighting climate change with ensuring sanitary and epidemiological well-being. Mm-hmm. They even say that this is a main goal of the climate doctrine is ensuring this epidemiological well-being in a changing climate. That's a direct quote. What does that mean? Like, what does that mean? Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Well, I can say that with near certainty that comes directly from the WHO's One Health plan of action that is attempting to link human well-being with animal well-being, with plant well-being, to the overall well-being of the environment. And so a lot of this in terms of the One Health has to do with zoonotic transfer of so-called viruses and other so-called pathogens. And therefore we must monitor and interfere with everything in the environment in order to ensure that paramount health is achieved for not just human beings, but for their animal and plant counterparts. So that seems to me like where this is coming from. And in terms of science, like actual science to justify this, there's nothing specific stated in this doctrine, although there is this scientific basis for this doctrine include recognition of the influence of human activity on climate against the background of its natural variability, leading to significant, predominantly unfavorable for humans and the environment consequences. So the scientific basis, and that's all there is stated, the scientific basis is that there's a wide recognition in some circles of human activity allegedly adversely affecting the climate, whatever the climate means at this point. And we can see this when we compare what's happening now against the background of climate, whatever that is, its natural variability. That's not science at all. That's
come on, Jesse. We all know what's going on. I mean, look, what's happening here is that we're blaming people for people can maybe be blamed for, you know, polluting a river or a lake or dumping giant piles of trash in a hole and poisoning the local ecosystem. Yeah, humans definitely did that. But are humans, is the amount of carbon in the atmosphere making the world less safe for democracy? I mean, it's so ridiculous. Like the way that we make these abstractions, right? Like there's problems and then we just sort of create these insane abstractions. And, you know, look, Jesse, you know, I spent the last few weeks in a nice little village in the middle of nowhere in Russia, not in the middle of nowhere, but in Novgorod Oblast between St. Petersburg and Russia. And look, people are out there every day outside, which is allegedly covered in horrible carbon, and we're planting vegetables, we're milking the goats, we're milking the cows, we're having a good time, we're living close to the good earth. And it's absolutely bizarre that people, like, we're pretending that you have to throw billions and trillions of dollars at these problems and put restrictions on people and make them suffer, tax them. We have to tax them and punish them and whip them for just being humans, for just living. But that's not true. There are many, many simple ways to enjoy life naturally, and you don't even have to go to the village. You can just, you know, live a normal life. You're not to blame. You're not the one causing the problems. This is an absolutely massive psyop that the Russian government, for some weird, strange, and inexplicable reason, has signed on to, are blaming normal people who make very modest salaries and almost use no energy to exist, are being punished and blamed for problems that probably don't even exist and are not actually your responsibility. And this we just have to accept that this is what we're being told and that it's total, complete baloney, you know, like enough already.
Right. And we're getting up to time, but I want to point out that social justice is mentioned in here too, as one of the challenges related to climate change, in particular, ensuring a balance between economic efficiency and social justice, eliminating potential conflicts of interest due to extreme manifestations of climate change, heat waves, floods, droughts, and other phenomena, cannot be solved through scientific methods alone. In such situations, it is possible to find a balance only within the framework of political process. So this is going to be beneficial for social justice, which is not defined in this doctrine, but another example of how these vague, very vague in a lot of cases, emotion setting off concepts are injected into this to add urgency to the narrative and add this, I would say, disingenuous notion that this is about concern for the underdeveloped and developing people of the world.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So we are up to time, but Riley, thank you as always for joining me to go through this. I think it's an important document to look at, and you have a link to it in your article on Substack, which I think is also an important article to read. And lots of lessons we can take away from this, and I think we laid quite a few of those out. Riley Wagaman, thank you again, good sir.
Thank you as always, Jesse. Take care.
You too. And Steve Hook up next here on TNT Radio. I'll be back on Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern. Take care.